Jets, he scores!
Again to the Leafs Nation podcast. With me this time is, of course, Danny Gray, and also this time we've got Mike Forbes from Bench Pat Puppets. How's it going, Mike?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing well, thanks. So, actually, I just saw Mike recently at the Marlies game. Any thoughts on the game to start off with?
It's difficult to assess. Norfolk seemed to be better at every act of the game. I don't know what your takeaway was, but it wasn't so much that the Marlies weren't performing. I think Norfolk could give some NHL clubs a run for their money.
Really? I mean, certainly I thought they were the better team. I think they were the better team all series. They outshot the Marlies, if I'm not mistaken, more than 2-1 in game four. They deserved the sweep, you know, lucky bounces and all. I don't even think the Marlies looked that good in game three when, you know, they got the horrendous non-call and the offside goal off the stanchion.
No, I agree. And even when you look at game four, the Marlies had two extended 5-on-3s and they only scored, that's how they got their only goal.
Yeah.
They never really threatened Norfolk the whole game, and Norfolk just slowly pulled away. They were first to the puck. When the Marlies tried to play physical, it looked like the Marlies were just bouncing off them. It just was boys against men.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there were a few guys out there for Toronto who I would say were a strong physical presence. Corbidian Holzer, I mean, I'd say he looks like as good a Mike Komisarek replacement as any. Let me think here. Jerry D'Amigo, short but stout. He stood his ground.
I saw earlier this season, I saw the Marlies play the Rochester Americans. We went to a couple of those games, and D'Amigo was a one-man wrecking crew. He was amazing in the series against Rochester. I don't know if that game can translate up to the Leafs, but he was easily the man of the match in the first game I went down to for the Marlies playoffs.
Yeah, he had a real hot start to this playoffs. As a matter of fact, he finished third in the team with points, 13 points in 17 games. So he was really on fire. Of course, he had a 25.8% shooting percentage. So, I mean, you know, yeah, he was hot. But still, I like to think that this is a guy who could make a step up and be a third, fourth line guy for the Leafs.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's so hard to know how the AHL game translates to the NHL game. Like unless you're head and shoulders above and putting up. Like I remember when years back when Grabowski was playing in Hamilton, he was averaging something like a point and a half per game in the AHL. Yeah. So you can see like there's a guy who's really ready to step up and go to the next, you know, go to the next level. But, I don't know. I don't have a talented enough eye to figure out which one of those guys can change their game and make a difference at the NHL level.
Well, I mean, I don't even know how much D'Amigo has to change his game. You know, obviously he was relied upon for some scoring in the playoffs, but through the regular season, he was not so much. So I guess I'd like to think that, you know, he's a checking line forward here. And a checking line forward in the NHL. I wouldn't expect anything offensively out of him, I don't think, other than hopefully to help the power, the penalty kill.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I can't hurt it, really.
That's a good point. And the Marlies did have an outstanding penalty kill straight through this playoff. I don't know how they were in the regular season, but they were, I think they had the best PK in the playoffs.
Yep.
They were good in the regular season, too. They were up near the top of the league, mainly because of the goaltending they got, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I mean, Ben Scrivens, okay, all right. So he got shelled in his last game, but, I mean, what a playoffs, right? I think Kemi was saying on Twitter, I don't know what's left for him to prove at the AHL level.
Yeah, there's nothing necessarily left to prove, but I don't think that we can sort of rely on that to mean NHL success, I guess.
Oh, for sure. Well, options for Burke in goal are dwindling. You know, Thomas Vokoun already traded for and signed. Luongo, I mean, you know, there's an outside chance Burke signs or manages to trade for him. But, I mean, outside of that, you know, Josh Harding? What else is he going to do to fix this goaltending tandem?
that is literally the I don't know, put whatever dollar sign you want in front of it, $1 billion question for this franchise and possibly for Burke's future. Like, if he cannot correct the goaltending, I don't think he's long for his role with the Leafs. And then when you look at what's out there, there's not a lot of easy solutions.
Yeah, really. I mean, because no one is going to give up a good young goaltender. I mean, there's not a chance anyone pries Price out of Montreal for anything short of the moon. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, Ben Scrivens may be looked to next year. As a matter of fact, I expect him to see some time in the NHL next year, you know, even if it's just as an injury replacement.
But that's the thing, right? He's not waiver protected anymore. So either he starts with the club and they run three goalies, or the only way you can call him up is for, yeah, an emergency call up or something like that, right? So I think a difficult decision is being made even more difficult by the fact that, you know, the Leafs don't have the luxury of sending these guys up and down protected from waivers. Both he and Ryan aren't waiver exempt anymore, right? So I think that really makes, again, yeah, a difficult decision much, much harder. And back to Michael's point, like, I think that will be sort of the determining factor for Brian Burke's maybe even career. He's already has this reputation that he's sort of goaltending's his Achilles heel. And if the Leafs have yet another season of below league average goaltending, I really don't know what you're going to do, right? I think he's gone.
Yeah, I was actually thinking of that during the game last night. You know, it's maybe almost as important as getting to the playoffs, fixing the goaltending situation. I mean, if the Leafs come agonizingly close to the playoffs, he's probably still gone. But if he can fix the goaltending situation, he maybe stands a chance of clinging to that GM position for another, I don't know, year or two. Maybe the new ownership decides to give him a chance before they clean house.
Well, how do we define fix, right? You know, supposedly Philadelphia went out and fixed their goaltending situation. And, you know, prior to this year, I don't think anyone thought Pittsburgh had goaltending issues, right? But is getting into the playoffs enough to say that he's fixed it? Is, you know, missing by a couple of points but getting good goaltending all year enough? Like, is really 1 year going to be enough to say he's fixed it?
Well, I guess I'd like to see some kind of action, you know? There has to be some kind of step taken to resolve the problem. Maybe it isn't a big trade for a big name goaltender. Maybe he puts all his chips down on Ben Scrivens, and Ben Scrivens comes in and platooned with James Reimer, they put together half decent goaltending. You know, maybe, and you know, in that case, then okay, Brian Burke, your gamble paid off. You know, maybe we award you with another year's worth of contract.
But what if, you know, one of them gets injured or sucks up the joint? Then you're saying, you know, either Reimer or Scrivens, take it on your own, because we don't have anybody else capable of stepping in here. No offense to UC Reinus or Mark Owuya, they're not capable of that. That was part of the problem when we tried to bring up Ben Scrivens this season, was that he just wasn't ready for, you know, the pressure of the Leafs franchise to be placed on his shoulders in November, right?
It's true. I mean, I think every single year, this is sort of a hallmark of Burke's tenure. As an aside, I love it when he talks, well, if you look at my track record. But the thing is, I'm starting to look at his track record and saying, well, yeah, you should probably stop talking about it. Every single year, the torch has fallen to some unproven goaltender, and we've been left with a mess on our hands. You know, first it was Rakoff falling, well, sorry, this isn't Burke, but Rakoff falling, passing the torch to Toskala falling, passing the torch to Gustafson failing, passing the torch to, you know, Reimer, and then Reimer falling, and, you know, well, generally there was no one to carry it. But, you know, I guess my point is I'd like to see some kind of action, some kind of attempt to fix the goaltending situation.
I agree, and I think to go back, I think even if he, you know, swings for the takes the home run swing, aims for the fences, if the Leafs don't make the playoffs next season, I have to think Burke is done.
I'd say so. I'd say it's a pretty reasonable assessment. I mean, new ownership coming in, his contract's expiring, it's good timing, he hasn't done squat.
No, it'll be if they miss the playoffs this year, Burke will have missed it. I might be doing the math wrong, but I got to think it's 5 years.
Oh, I thought it was four.
Yeah. So, okay, maybe it's four. Yeah. But, I mean, that's a long time to go without.
Yeah, really.
And not, you know, sort of stockpiling picks, a la the Edmonton Oilers or other teams who have missed pretty consistently, right? You know, we're sort of, again, not this year so much, but the last couple, obviously, you know, I don't want to debate the Phil Kessel trade, but for whatever reason, you know, we didn't have those high-end draft picks, and so there was really no reward for finishing at the basement other than some more damage to my liver. But aside from that, yeah, I think that – but who do you bring in? Does Dave Nonis step in? Is that sort of what's going to happen again? Is it going to be like Vancouver all over again? Does he just kind of clean up Burke's mess?
Well, that doesn't sound like a bad option at this point. I mean, worked out okay for Vancouver. I know they haven't won a cup, but I mean, heck, they could have at this point, you know? It's all a lot of dice rolling, so, you know, I guess I look at Vancouver's situation and I think, you know, that worked out pretty well for them. The fact that they didn't win is, you know, a few bounces here or there, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I think, boy, you talk about night and day. I think Leaf fans would probably be ecstatic for, you know, a first-round playoff exit.
So,
you know, it seems kind of funny to compare it to Vancouver and see Vancouver as being unsuccessful simply because they didn't win the cup. Like, what would Leaf fans give to have 100-point-plus franchise-winning President's Trophies and going deep into the playoffs? I mean, it's unimaginable.
Yeah,
like, right. It's almost hard to daydream about that.
I know. My wildest fantasies are about first-round playoff exits.
A 920 save percentage. That's... I used to just take it for granted that the Leafs were going to make the playoffs, and I just, you know, when I was a teenager, I was like, no, like, I'll see them win the cup before I'm 20 or 25, and oh boy. Of all the things I've been wrong about the way the world works, I think that might be the biggest one.
Yeah, really. Well, all right, so let's turn to a slightly more positive note here. Marley's at a ready for the big jump. We already talked about Jerry DiMigo possibly making the jump to the fourth line. I think Matt Fratton's proven, you know, he's ready for NHL duty. Any disagreement there?
I think Fratton's a really interesting case study because I was, at a Rochester American game, and he was deadly at both ends of the ice. Like, he scored a goal, set up a goal. Totally blew a check that caused a goal, had a giveaway that caused a goal. So it'll be interesting to see what the coaching staff's tolerance is for that type of play. I mean, you know, it seems like Kadri got buried in the minors because they said he kept turning over the puck in dangerous areas of the ice. And boy, from what I've seen of Matt Fratton, he's just as guilty of that. His upside, of course, is a great physical game. The hits he throws, he looks like he's got a great shot. So, yeah, I think Fratton could make it up next year. And whether or not he sticks, I don't know, but he could probably chip in 10 goals.
Yeah, yeah, that's about what I'm thinking. Third line, fourth line, sure. Yeah, I'm willing to give him a shot. The thing, going back to Kadri, you know, those offensive zone turnovers right at the, not offensive zone, but right at the offensive zone blue line. He's been turning the puck over in that exact same spot for 3 or 4 years now. I'm beginning to think that's just a hallmark of his game, and I kind of doubt it's going to change at this point. Like, I watched him do that many, many times in London.
Well, he's more inclined to carry the puck in the zone than he is to dump and chase, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Not necessarily that it's a good thing, but I think, yeah, that's just part of his game, is that he wants the puck on his stick. He doesn't want to give it up, and it's good if you can gain the zone with the puck, but if not, then like you said, you've got the potential for an odd man rush going the other way.
Yeah.
But I think I agree with both of you. I think Fratton deserves some NHL time. I mean, he had 8 goals in pretty limited duty. And I think it's interesting that you mentioned the sort of bad defensive play, because I think that was sort of one of the reasons why they argued for keeping Fratton over Kadri with the Leafs last season, was that they felt that Fratton played a safer game. Maybe that's because he sort of didn't have the sort of attitude that Kadri does, where, you know, I'm an offensive player, this is what I'm going to do. Maybe he tried to play a little more two-way responsible, and then when he's in the AHL, that sort of disappeared. But I think that he showed that he wasn't necessarily a liability. So I'd be interested to see a line of Bozak, Kadri, and Fratton actually as a third line. I wrote about that on the blog last week. Obviously, that's contingent upon the Leafs acquiring a number one center, or even just a number 2B center, or someone a little bit better than Tyler Bozak in that role. Because I think if you put Bozak on the third line, you're going to get a pretty decent sheltered scoring line out of those three.
Possible.
You know who impressed me and seemed to get a little better as the series went on was Gardner, Jake Gardner.
Oh, yeah. I think he looked fantastic. He looked like easily the best defender for the Marlies. Heck, he probably looked like one of the better offensive players in the lineup, too.
Yeah, I agree. The first game I saw him this year was against the Rochester Americans in the playoffs, and he looked completely disinterested, didn't want to be there, apathetic. And then we went back for a second match, and he looked better. And then to see him play yesterday, he looked great.
Yeah, and you know, it was really all the things that we've heard so much about already. Fantastic skating, great rushing ability, decent eye for a pass. You know, everything I would hope him to do at the NHL level.
Yeah, so I think he's a real gem. The one guy, not to be negative, but the one guy I was really disappointed in, I don't know if he's hurt or not, was Colburn.
Yeah, he doesn't look particularly strong, or didn't out there. Certainly not a dominating physical presence for a guy who's 6'5".
As far as I understand, he's playing through a wrist injury or something.
Is he? Okay.
But he also mentioned that there was something else going on that he couldn't mention and would talk about after the series. So I'm not sure if the wrist injury was just worse or if there was something else. And then Myrtle had a piece on him about how he's eating basically like 5,000 calories a day and still can't put on muscle. And he's actually still growing. Like, I think he grew like half an inch over the last year or something like that, like during his time with the Leafs. So I think that I don't know what else could possibly be going on. You know, maybe he has Crohn's disease or something, but I don't really know what. But I think there is definitely something underlying the sort of the struggles that he's had. I think he missed some time this season with a concussion as well, right? Egan's was talking about, and he said, you know, the kid started out really great. You know, if you remember back to the beginning of the season, I think he was on a point per game pace or something. That's why, you know, the Leafs called him up. But after his injury, I think it just, you know, he couldn't maintain that pace the whole season. So it might have just been a conditioning or, you know, a little puck luck, obviously. And then just some general regression, right? Because he's still young and he's not a sure thing.
No, and he was, by the end of the game, he was kind of getting spot duty on the fourth line. He was not seeing a lot of ice. And when he was out there, I found him really just disengaged and ineffective, like just invisible. Right. You wouldn't know that he's apparently one of the team's top prospects. But, you know, it's one game in fairness to him, but he was not impressive.
Well, his stat sheet for the season doesn't look wonderful either. You know, talking about a recent injury, I mean, maybe his wrist is bothering him, and you know, maybe this season was disrupted by that injury earlier. But 39 points in 65 games, and you know, you talked about puck luck. I just looked at his shooting percentage, 13.2. So not terribly unlucky or anything. In fact, I'd say that's probably pretty average.
Right.
So we'll see what he does next year. I'm beginning to sort of. I guess I don't want to say lose hope. Maybe that's a bit strong, but my expectations for him are certainly falling.
I think the people who I've heard, you know, talk about him say he still has NHL potential, but not number one center or even, you know, I think Mikhail Grabowski even, I don't think he's going to be that good. I mean, you never know, obviously, but I think that that's what they're sort of saying, you know, he could be a 2B or a third line center with a little bit of offensive upside. But yeah, I'm not holding up my hopes right now just based on, I mean, maybe he's just struggled with injuries and everything this season, but I wouldn't put him above, you know, Kadri or Fratton or maybe even Carter Ashton on the depth chart at this point.
All right, here's a bit of scab picking for you, and it's not a big one, so don't worry. But the Keith Ollie for
Ashton,
yeah, like I'm not sure why that deal was really necessary. Ollie didn't look great, that's for sure.
Because Keith Ollie's terrible, is that it?
Is that enough? I mean,
I think he proved he's not going to be a top pairing NHL defenseman. So,
well, nuts to that. I'd be happy with a third pairing defenseman, a seventh defenseman. Is he anything? Carter Ashton doesn't look like anything.
Apparently, the Leafs scouting staff was really high on him.
He got a concussion against the Americans, Rochester Americans. So Carter Ashton did. So I don't know how well he was recovered from that and how that might have affected his game. Now, that said, I saw two of the games against the Rochester Americans, including the one he was concussed in, and he didn't really stand out. I mean, he was kind of an energy guy, a bigger guy, but I didn't. I was just thinking, you know, got to keep an eye on that kid.
All right. Well, here's hoping. I didn't know what to think of the trade at the time, but well, of course, Ollie coming back to face us in the finals didn't sit well.
Was he integral? Like, did he look really good out there? Or
no.
Not particularly.
Slow and out of position.
No. The Admirals were a good looking club. My cap's off to them. I was thoroughly impressed with how dominant they were yesterday. There was long stretches of the game where the Marlies couldn't even gain their zone or get shots. Like it was a really lopsided match.
Now, are these guys all sort of prospects? I kind of get the feeling that there's a lot of AHL superstars on that team, and it's not a very young team. But I don't know.
Well, the MVP was Alex Picard, and I understand that he is looking increasingly like an AHL superstar, if I'm not mistaken. Mike, do you know anything about that?
No, I don't. And to be frank, not many of their names tweaked anything for me. Like usually, you hear their names, you think, oh yeah, he went the 2010 draft, or you know that type of thing stands out. And you know they scored enough goals to hear their names over the loud system, and none of the names were popped for me. And Conacher got a fistful of assists, and I don't know if he's. This is terrible. I don't know if he's 22 or 32. I don't know a thing about him.
I get the sense that aside from, Tokarski's pretty young, and I think Richard Panik might be young as well. But, Brett Connolly's sort of Tampa's number one prospect. I don't even think he's on that team. I remember actually it was funny because Tambolini said the other day, he didn't really care that the Oil Kings? Is that their AHL team, the one that beat?
Yeah, I want to say yes.
I think he said, I don't really care if they win. Like, as far as him, the outcomes weren't the important thing. It was just the fact that the players were getting meaningful experience, playing in the finals, going deep in the playoffs, playing together. I think that's an interesting way to look at it. Like, I am disappointed, obviously, that the Marlies were swept and lost. But, I mean, you have to look at the fact that Kadri was out, Fratton was out, Ashton was playing through an injury. Jake Gardner's played something like 90 or 100 hockey games this year between preseason and then the whole season with the Leafs and then playoffs with the Marlies. So I think for me the important thing to take is the process, right? That they played together, that Scrivens sort of stood on his head, and that these guys were able to see some important hockey to play some playoff hockey, right? So
agreed.
I think that's where the value is going to be, right?
All right. Well, then let's continue on then to the NHL game that happened last night. Devils and Kings. You guys watched that?
Yep,
I did. Yeah, I watched most of the second and the third.
Excellent. Yeah, I honestly this hasn't been a very high scoring game. Last night's game somewhat accepted, but I found it to be a pretty exciting series. Are you guys in the same place here?
Only until now. Before now, I wasn't really that interested. I watched a couple of games off and on, but it wasn't as compelling as Vancouver and Boston last year, just for the sheer hate factor, as well as not wanting to see either one of them really win. So I think that was a little bit more compelling. But I'm interested in the series now. I'll definitely watch the rest of it.
Yeah, I think it's been a fascinating series. It was interesting. The Kings, as everybody know, they got into that 2-0 lead, and people were ready to kind of put the Stanley Cup right into their hands, but they were both overtime wins. This has been a really tight, close series, and it surprised me how quickly people thought it was over. That said, boy, last night's game, you talk about puck luck. How many pucks did the Kings posts and crossbars did the Kings hit?
Yeah, at least five in the third period.
Seriously, and the other way, the winning goal went in off a defenseman's jersey. Like, this was a game of inches last night. It really could have gone either way. This whole series could just tip either way. It's been pretty good hockey. I think the comparison to Vancouver-Boston is a great one. Last year, it was can't-miss hockey. Like, I had to tune in, had to watch it, wanted to see it, couldn't wait for it. This year, I have to admit, I have been watching it, but it's not appointment TV for me. If I miss a game, that's okay.
I found last night's game in particular, tons of chances, a lot of rushing hockey, a lot of excitement, really, generally. This isn't the old Devils, like we've been saying. It's fun to watch. I mean, it lacks, I will grant you, a lot of the drama of previous seasons, but hey, this is still pretty good stuff. One other thing I will say, I was speculating the other day on Twitter about how, if the Devils get swept, I wonder what this will do for Zach Parise's odds of being re-signed. Because, it's always sort of a bit embarrassing, to be swept, no matter the series or the round or whatever. And, somebody really disagreed and said, well, this hasn't been an embarrassing series at all. There are two overtime games. They've played well. It's true.
But no one's going to remember that in like 5 years if he gets swept.
Yeah, exactly. But now that the Devils have made a series of it, I kind of wonder if, you know, that'd change how a guy like Parise'd feel. I mean,
it's not going to give the Devils any more money. And that's really what they need at this point to re-sign Zach Parise, right? More money and a goaltender who's not, you know, 45 years old.
But it does give them more money. They play more home
games. They're going bankrupt. That money's going to their creditors. It's not going to Zach Parise.
I guess.
Well, to me now, what the compelling thing about this series is and what I'm worried about, I was saying this to my girlfriend earlier, is that if the universe could not get any crueler, it might take away the fact that the Leafs are still the only team to come back from down 3-0 and win the cup. Like, can they take anything else away from us at this point, really? Like, is someone going to score 11 points next year and break Daryl Sittler's record? Like, we don't have anything left. They're going to take this away from us, too.
No, man. LA is still going to take this.
Neither of those thoughts had occurred to me, and now they're going to be, like, top of mind. Now, I think we could put a prop bet somewhere that somebody's scoring 11 points. Probably a Montreal Canadian is scoring 11 points next year.
It's going to be Lars Eller.
It'll be Scott Gomez.
No, it's going to be Lars Eller because he was was supposed to be, quote-unquote, our draft pick.
Right. From the Toskala deal.
Right.
Yeah.
and he was traded for yet another competent goalie, so just keeps on giving that trade. Sorry for putting that on everyone's mind, but that's what I'm worried about now.
That's a great point. It's a great point. I really hope, and I have, you know what, I don't care who wins. But that said, I kind of want LA to win this series, and I'm not sure why that is. I'm not sure why I'm kind of somewhat rooting for LA. I've got nothing against the Devils. I have nothing against any of those players. But for some reason, I would like to see LA pull this one out. What about you guys?
I'm sitting in the exact same position there. I'm cheering for the Kings. I have no idea why. They're a relatively fun team to watch. I have nothing against them per se. I think that's it. They have nothing. They have no player that I really despise. There's no real connection to ex-Leafs. I have no residual hate from 1993, at least for them. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, you better qualify that one. I think you probably still have a fair bit of residual hate.
Well, for one man, but...
The shot counter at the rink is the person I have to hate for.
Which rink?
What?
Oh, sorry. Back at the Leafs got knocked out by Jersey in... Which cup? Which playoff?
Oh, right. Yeah, it was 2002.
And in the elimination... 2002, and you know, they talk about how the Leafs only had, like, you know, five shots on net that game or whatever. I'm a bit obsessive. I've actually rewatched that game, and the Leafs had way more shots than that. And it, you know, as an obsessive Leaf fan, it kind of galls me that comes up all the time, that the Leafs got eliminated in a game which they, you know, they could only generate seven shots on net or something. I mean, Sergei Bereson was on that team. He probably had seven shots that game.
You should make a post with screen caps of each shot.
I should. Yes, my family would love me for doing that. Dad, what are you doing? Important work here, kids.
All right. On that note, maybe we'll cap it there.
Sounds awesome.
Cool. Well, listen, good chatting with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Thanks for having me back on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thanks for being on. Well, cool. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.